This is Audible.
The Waitress, an Audible original. Written by K.L. Slater. Narrated by Claudia Jesse. Prologue. The blood from the body spreads in slow, thick ribbons across the pavement, dark and glistening, channeling into the grooves between the pavement stones. In the distance, sirens wail, growing louder, drawing closer. People clamour to the edges of the scene, backs pressing against shop fronts, eyes flicking between the body and the building. Behind me, the crowd is swelling, pressing forward, drawn by the spectacle. People jostle, their faces lit with horror, with fascination. A man gasps, a woman cries out. London hums all around me, restless and alive. The air is hot and thick, the street choked with stalling traffic. Brake lights jam on and off, horns blaring urgent and angry. All of it swallowed by the growing tide of panicked voices pressing closer. I tilt my head back, my eyes scaling the sublime jagged spine of glass and steel that pierces the night sky. The building is a shimmering blaze of light where figures move behind the glass, shadowed and frantic. I hear someone call my name, see a uniformed line pressing closer, but I don't move. I stare down at the wide eyes fixed on nowhere, the broken body, a mash of blood, flesh and bone. There's not much left of him now. The liar. The cheat who tried to ruin my life. It's all over for him. For me, it's only just beginning. Chapter 1. Saturday. Alicia. My heels are pinching, and the waistband of my skirt is already chafing against my clammy skin. I've been at the drinks reception for over an hour. I never thought it would be so hot in here. The other servers are wearing the regulation black and white uniform, but they're in loose clothing with sensible flat pumps or trainers. I saw their faces when I arrived, taking in my bouncy blow-dry, silky blouse and tight pencil skirt, glancing at one another, their twitching mouths betraying bitchy, judgmental attitudes. I must admit, I'm regretting my choice of outfit now. There are still 8 hours to go on this shift. It's going to be a long evening, but on the bright side, I've already located my mark. The guy standing at the Art Deco mirrored bar is very easy on the eye. He's wearing a relaxed olive-coloured linen suit with a plain white tee under it. I like his laid-back look in this room, mostly full of people who have all the symbols of their wealth on display. Each time I complete a lap of the room, I duck back to the catering room where I dispense my tray and get a few moments of peace. I'm supposed to restock the welcome drinks there, but it's just nice not being hounded by the sour-faced manager, Janice. I've got a bit of a quick break right now. I pick up a glass of champagne and study the glittering lights and dark shadows of London far below us. The Thames is a winding ribbon of molten silver, and beyond it, the Shard pierces the sky, its sleek glass facade catching every glimmer of light. The Orbit has got to be the highest, most luxurious building I've ever worked in. I'm mesmerized. 58 floors up in London's newest landmark building, and everything is beneath us. The great and the good are gathered here for the opening of the Mercury Function Suite. Influencers on Insta and TikTok are churning out the content. This morning's papers were full of double-paged features. Journalists stand awkwardly on their phones, drafting copy, declaring, "All hail the Orbit, London's most exclusive metropolitan enclave." I sneak a sip of champagne before heading back into the throng. The noise level is ramping up in here as more VIP guests arrive. The room flickers and stutters with camera flashes. I recognize a few faces in the sea of perfect people behind me. a couple of soap actors, the lead singer of a famous 90s boy band, a trending YouTuber, and a glamorous female presenter from Good Morning Britain. Every guest is clad in exquisite designer clothes and classy jewellery. I bite my lip with envy. So many millions of pounds crammed into one small space. I have an eye for expensive gear, even though I don't own any myself anymore. Tonight is the first step in putting that right. I signed with Elevate 3 weeks ago, the best premium events agency in London, if you believe their hype. Swapping the dive bars and the shit pubs for members clubs and art galleries. Elevate are not the sort of company to advertise their staff vacancies on Indeed. They operate on a referral basis only. Let's just say a friend of a friend put in a word, and I emailed my newly edited CV over. I've done a couple of smaller events on a trial run, and now I'm here in central London, mixing with the creme de la creme. Well, pouring their champagne at least, but it's a start. Balancing the tray of champagne flutes on my hand, I weave through the crowd. The room hums with posh accents and expensive perfume. It's all sharp suits and glittering dresses tonight, most of them here to be seen, rather than for the networking and the free drinks. The cool guy in the olive suit I spotted at the bar earlier is standing near the floor-to-ceiling windows now, talking to a woman in a navy cocktail dress. Her face looks familiar. I catch a telltale flicker of panic on his face, and so I put down the tray of champagne and pick up a fresh glass and a bottle of dry white wine, making my way over there. Once I'm close enough, I hear his dilemma. He's forgotten her name. Yes, as I was saying, Miss... He stammers in an East End accent. She turns as I approach. Miss Lennox, I think you prefer a crisp, dry white wine. Would you like me to pour you a glass? You remembered! The woman's face lights up. She hands over her barely touched glass of house champagne and peers at me. I think you worked at my gallery opening a couple of weeks ago, didn't you? That's right. I flash her a quick smile. You were a big fan of the Puy Fumé, as I recall. Yes, indeed I was. Delicious. What an extraordinary memory you have. Her eyes dart to my name badge. Thank you, Alicia. I catch the guy's eye, and he gives me the tiniest nod of gratitude, so subtle it was noticeable only to me. Smoothly, he picks up the thread. I hear the Lennox Gallery brought a collection over from Paris. Indeed, and we were thinking of doing something similar here in the fabulous Mercury Suite. She's fully engaged in the conversation again, the moment saved. He points to various sculptures and canvases decorating the space. He doesn't look like a traditional businessman, a slave to the city. He's dressed too casually, too on trend, but he seems totally at ease, like he owns everyone in the room. I glide away and I can feel his eyes on me as I go. My tray is lighter now, just a few glasses left, but I keep moving, slipping between designer suits and runway dresses to stay out of Janice's way. There's a real energy in the room now. I could watch these people all night. The talent managers and the brand designers, the CEOs and influencers all crammed together in this melting pot of gossip and opportunity. This is where the magic happens. This is where the deals are done, where fortunes are made. I can feel them charging through the air like fireflies. I'm good at reading a room and sensing the undercurrents, always have been. It's like watching a game where half the rules are unspoken. You can learn to fill in the blanks. It's a game I'm good at. A game of survival. I'm circling back toward the bar when I spot my mark again. He's standing near a cluster of suits, half listening, half scanning the room. His eyes are sharp, but there's something guarded about him as he watches a pair of younger men deep in conversation by the canapé station, one gesturing animatedly with a glass of red. The other, taller and broader, has his arms folded, nodding a little too enthusiastically. Something about their dynamic makes me slow my steps, loitering closer to tidy my tray without drawing attention. Suddenly, my guy is right next to me helping himself to another flute of champagne. He looks different to his photos and the articles I've read on him in my endless scrolling through his social media. In the flesh, he's taller than I expected, but less intimidating too. There's a relaxed ease to him which the photos don't capture. I say, "Are you enjoying your night, sir?" His mouth twitches in amusement. Let's just say I was, but I must be losing my touch. I tilt my head. Oh dear, sounds serious. I didn't take you for the losing type. He grins. I'm not, but tonight might be an exception. Tragic. Though I hear some losses can be rewarding. I let the words hang, watching his reaction. He chuckles, leaning in slightly. Depends on what's being offered, I suppose. I raise a brow. Try me. All right, he says, eyes flicking over me as if assessing the odds. I thought I was closing a deal with that guy over there, but he's gone cold on me. He sighs, glancing toward the canapé station. He seemed so interested too. Oh well, can't win them all. Makes sense. What do you mean? He frowns. Look at him. He can't focus on what's being said. His jaw muscle is going crazy. I've noticed he's visited the loo quite a few times already this evening. Maybe you're best avoiding having a business partner with that kind of habit. Just saying. He raises an amused eyebrow, but he doesn't respond. Maybe I overstepped the mark. I can do that sometimes. I make my excuses and head toward the kitchen to replenish my tray, but he finds me again. You're observant, I'll give you that, he says, his words laced with curiosity. Just part of the job? I reply lightly, shifting the tray to my other hand. Drinks or gossip? There's always something spilling at these events. You just have to recognize the signs. I give him a smile and sidle away, the lights of London becoming flared through the glass. Alicia, stop staring out of the window and focus. A harsh nasal voice snaps. It's Janice. I look at her, taking the sharp features and dull eyes. There's no light in them at all. She doesn't want to be here. Janice has had it in for me since I walked in and told her I'd just been signed to the agency. Her narrowed black eyes had swept over my honey blonde curls and high heels. Did nobody tell you how to dress appropriately? She'd said scathingly. You can start by tying back that mop of hair. I look at Janice now and think about what could have made her so mean. Her parched complexion, the small tight line where her lips ought to be. Are you listening to me? She snaps, while other servers glance our way. More champagne is needed by the door, and if you're to continue working for Elevate, you'll do well to remember that I don't like repeating myself. Sorry, Janice. I'd like to hit back with a nice sarcastic reply, but I need her to approve my first night's work here. She holds all the power for jobs at the Orbit. I place the glass I'm holding on the silver tray and load a few more flutes of fizz on there. I weave through the bodies to stand behind the Elevate senior greeters at the door who constantly regurgitate their overused script. So lovely to see you again, an air kiss on each cheek. It's been too long. Might I just say, you look incredible. After their gushing welcome, I'm supposed to proffer my tray of bubbles while smiling like a maniac. Janice's instructions to us were clear at the briefing. At all times, smile. If someone is rude to you, smile. If you're about to pass out, smile. So I smile. I'm very careful to keep on smiling. I smile until my jaw aches, until my eyes start to water. All the time reminding myself that this job is the only way I'm going to get the chance to put everything that's happened behind me and start again. An older man with swept back silver hair, wearing a tailored gabardine suit, plucks a flute of pink fizz from my tray without looking at me or breaking his step. He's just past me when he somehow manages to stumble forward. His arm flies up and my entire tray of drinks is upended as he tries in vain to regain his balance, There's a loud crash of glass and metal. I let out a yelp and release the tray, jumping back to escape the ensuing shower of Laurent Perrier. A gasp rises like a balloon from the crowd, and for a few moments, the conversation stops dead. Silence rolls across the large round room in waves, until there is just the piped Ibiza chill-out tunes and no chatter at all.
"For God's sake!" the man rounds on me. "What were you thinking stood there in the way like that?"
He whips a hanky from his pocket and begins to dab at the blush-coloured splashes on his otherwise immaculate white shirt. The atmosphere in the room has taken an about turn. Amid the frozen bodies and shocked faces, I spot movement. It's Janice, racing toward us like a rabid greyhound.
"What happened?"
she rounds on me, her voice two octaves higher than usual.
"What have you done?"
I swallow hard. I can see exactly how this is about to go.
"I did nothing. He tripped and knocked the..."
"I'm so sorry, sir." Janice shoots me a withering glance. "If you'd like to come this way, I'll direct you to the washroom."
I didn't see her there standing so close.
The handkerchief hangs limply in his hand as he stares mournfully down at his shirt.
"I'm soaked through."
As Janice fusses over him, I say, "You must have seen me because you took a drink from my tray." Too late, I clamp my mouth shut. I'm only supposed to smile, not argue the toss. Janice ushers the drenched man toward the door before turning back and hissing at me.
"Get your coat, Alice. Your shift is over."
"It's Alicia," I say.
"I don't care what your name is. Mistakes happen, but blaming the guest is inexcusable. You're relieved of your duties."
My heart sinks. I tell myself I can't afford to lose this gig, especially when I've done nothing wrong. I just need to make her understand. I start to follow them.
"Janice, I'm sorry, okay?"
I'm calling out too loudly. The people near us step aside. I have to get my point across.
"I swear it was his fault. He tripped and..."
Janice spins.
"Watch my lips. It's never the guest's fault. Just leave. Leave now."
She spits out the words before scurrying after the man. Chapter 2. The guests closest to me are still staring, but the rest of the room has already returned to their conversations. Heads thrown back laughing, perfect smiles and shining hair. The room is back to business as usual. Feels as if I was never even there. Dejected, I step back and place the small empty tray on a nearby stool. I stare down at my sodden clothes and the cheap faux suede stilettos I got in the New Year sales, and I feel tears pricking at my eyes. I walk quickly toward the quiet space at the back, close to the staff cloakroom.
Shit.
How am I going to explain this to him? Tell him I've been kicked out of the very place I need to be. It's taken weeks to get me in here, to get me close to... He's not going to take this well. "Hey. Are you okay?" Here's my mark again, standing right in front of me. When he sees my damp pencil skirt and sopping blouse, he begins to pat his pockets down. "I'm sure I must have something to mop up your..." I sniff, a tear rolling down my cheek. My humiliation is complete, but I manage to register that close up. This guy is even better looking than I first thought. Then I remember I've had it with men, especially ones I meet at work. Now is the time to tell him I just need to get out of here. "Thanks," I say quietly, "but I'm leaving now." He doesn't move. "Tell you what, come with me and we'll try and find you some fresh clothes. You can't carry on working like that." "No, I'm better just getting away from here." "Take a breather and give yourself a few minutes to calm down." He glances at my name badge again. "What do you say, Alicia? You can't carry on working when you're so upset." I look at him, sniffing the tears back. Annoyingly, he really is very cute. His eyes are a beguiling deep brown, and he looks genuinely concerned about me. "I've just been fired, so I won't be working anymore. I offer him a small smile. Thanks for being nice, though. I'm taking a risk here, but without waiting for an answer, I walk around him and enter the pokey, windowless staff cloakroom behind the drinks storage room at the rear of the mirrored bar. As I pass, I snatch up a bottle of Laurent Perrier Rosé from an open box and take it with me, popping the cork when I close the door. I strip my wet blouse off and sink to the floor. I take a deep breath and gulp from the bottle, grimacing at the sting of the bubbles. Taking my phone out of my bag, I stare at the notifications. There's a text message from the bank about my exceeded overdraft limit, but that's the least of my worries. 3 missed calls from the usual number and 2 WhatsApp messages demanding I call him back. I take another long swig from the bottle. I can't let him get to me like this. I can't. There has to be a way out. Quickly, I unlock the phone again and swipe the notifications away. My thumb hovers over the image it reveals. My son's wide, gap-toothed smile lights up the photo. His much-loved favorite Spider-Man t-shirt well worn. My chest aches and I shrug it off. I can't afford to get sentimental. Focus is everything. Taking another swig of champagne, I tap the settings and choose a stock photo of a white powdered beach at sunrise. The tranquil ocean replaces my son's face, erasing the evidence of the only life that really matters to me. There's a scrape and a bang behind me. Startled, I grab my blouse and clutch it to my chest, dropping my phone as the door flies open. In my attempt to conceal the stolen bottle as I stand up, I spill even more alcohol over myself. He stands in the doorway, a halo of light around his broad frame filling the gap. Oops, sorry, didn't realize you weren't decent. He turns his back. No, it's okay, I put down the bottle and turn away slightly, shrugging on the damp blouse and doing up a couple of buttons. I've basically stolen a bottle of champagne that costs roughly half of what I would have earned tonight, if I hadn't wrecked my chances and now I've been caught red-handed. I turn back around. I'm leaving now anyway. Summoning the final dregs of my tattered pride, I pick up my phone and walk over to the table in the corner where I left my bag and coat earlier. No need to rush off, he says reasonably. Stay and have a drink with me. I shake my head, sliding my phone back into my handbag. It's a nice thought, but if the head witch spots me, she'll call security.
Head witch? He frowns.
My manager. He grins and flicks on the light, revealing the full, underwhelming glory of our cramped surroundings.
Oh, I doubt that.
Don't underestimate her. If she finds you back here, you'll probably get thrown out on your ear too. He leans against the wall and smirks.
Well, that's a risk I'm willing to take. Not every day you get to be seen somewhere this cool, right?
He waves a hand around. I glance at the walls, which are close enough that if I stretch out my arms, I could probably touch both at the same time. By that, I take it you mean this? The cleaning cupboard?
Hey, don't knock it, he says.
Exclusive, intimate, suffocating. He clears his throat. But still, you know, the orbit. I shake my head, biting back a smile. The orbit itself is fancy enough, I suppose. A bit predictable. His smile falters just a touch.
In what way?
Vanilla interior. Too safe. It's lazy, trying to please everyone. He purses his lips, but the corners of his eyes crinkle good-naturedly.
I'm not sure I do know. Tell me.
So I do. I let him have it. Look, I've worked enough members' clubs in London to know they're practically identical to this one inside. Full of the same people under the same fake Rothko prints, chatting the same old rubbish to the same old faces. Then they catch themselves in the mirror at 2 a.m. and realise everyone is like them. And so they move on to somewhere else and the whole thing repeats itself. I shrug on my coat and laugh. I give this place a year, tops.
You're funny.
His widening smile disarms me. Funny and smart with a delicious sprinkling of cynicism, which I find quite hard to resist.
I really do think you need to stay and have a drink with me.
I let my lips part slightly, as if I'm considering it.
Then I exhale, shaking my head with a small, regretful smile. Oh, I don't know. I really shouldn't. His brows lift, amused but intrigued. Shouldn't? That sounds dangerously close to wanting to. I let out a soft laugh, tilting my head as if he might just be right. Sadly, I have places to be, things to do. I slip the strap of my handbag over my shoulder, taking a slow step toward the door. He leans in just a fraction. One drink won't hurt. I glance back at him, feigning uncertainty. I don't know. He gives me a slow, knowing grin. Come on. Live dangerously. Stay. Just for a little while. I pause for effect, then let out a sigh as if I'm giving in. Okay. Just the one drink. I meet his gaze with a teasing smile. But you'd better make it worth my while. Tell you what. Come through to the private hospitality suite and I'll get you something nice to wear before we have our drink. One proper drink. None of the crap they're serving out there. Deal? I give him an amused smile. Sounds good. But we'll need to keep out of my manager's way, or it could be embarrassing. You worry too much. I follow him out of the staff room, but instead of walking back through to the main event space, he takes a left, and after punching a code into the security pad, leads me further inside the building. The din of the party is now a distant throb as we walk down quiet hallways carpeted in a coffee and milk striped Berber. Soft white LED lights lining the floor space, so it feels a bit like being on a runway. Photographs showing the construction of the orbit at varying stages are dotted along the walls. Are guests allowed back here? I ask, suddenly realizing we've passed through a security door. Nope, strictly no guests back here. But how come you have the code? Do you work here? I say naively. Kind of. He looks at me and winks. Let's just say I've got friends in high places. Chapter 3. He stops walking and opens a door to his left. Let's see what we can find for you in here. I follow him into a large dressing room with plush chairs that face a long marble counter. When he snaps a switch, a frame of dazzling LED bulbs pops up around the wall of mirrors. I run my hand along a counter packed with top brand makeup sets and hair appliances, all neatly arranged and ready for use. He opens a door that leads into an adjoining space. Hopefully you'll be able to find something you might like to wear in here. An even bigger area is lined with clothes rails bearing outfits in all colors and shapes. On the floor, underneath the rails, fabulous shoes are lined up. Something unfurls inside me. For a man, you keep an awful lot of women's clothing, I say cheekily, reaching to touch a fine, sparkly fabric. He chuckles. It's all stuff we've had delivered for modeling shoots and, well, emergencies like this one. He pulls out a silky black and yellow pattern dress that looks like a distinctive Dolce & Gabbana print I saw in a magazine. Emergencies? Here? You'd be surprised. We had a celebrity couple incident here last week that went viral on TikTok. She saw him looking at another woman in the sushi restaurant and redesigned his Alexander McQueen couture jacket with red wine before storming out. He was grateful for our emergency wardrobe. And when he'd got changed, he ended up staying for the evening and buying half a dozen bottles of Cristal to drown his sorrows. I must have missed that one online. Sounds like he deserved it, though. I give him an impish grin. I've never owned a piece of couture clothing. Unless you count the fact my mum used to run up unique elasticated trousers and skirts to save money on buying my school uniform. They were certainly one of a kind. He looks at me as if he doesn't know whether to laugh or feel sorry for me. And for a second, I think he's going to say something profound. But then the moment passes and he smiles. Have a scout through, try some things on, pick what you like. I have a couple of calls to make, so I'll be back in a sec. When he leaves, I strip off my damp work clothes and slip on the silky black and yellow shirt dress that the label confirms is indeed a D&G. What fun. Playing dress up and it gets me closer to my goal. Win-win. The full-length mirror catches my eye and I gasp at my own reflection. The dress shows slightly more cleavage and is a bit shorter than I'd like. Disappointed, I slip it off again. It's not right for tonight anyway, and besides, it would have looked better with the black hair I had before I moved to London, before that version of me had to disappear. He taps on the door and waits until I say it's okay for him to enter. I emerge from the dressing area in the Ralph Lauren champagne satin cocktail dress of my dreams. My feet are encased in strappy gold heels.
Wow, classy or what?
He gives a low whistle. Ta-da! I throw my hands up and laugh to try and cover my self-consciousness. The dress might look like $1 million, but that doesn't match what I'm feeling inside. His eyes linger.
Seriously, Alicia, you look amazing.
Thanks, I say, my cheeks burning. I do know I look quite good in this dress and shoes. It's just that I also feel like a fraud, like I've borrowed a costume for a role I wasn't born to play. The shimmer of this place, the effortless laughter and quiet hum of money in the air, it all feels just a little too smooth, too polished. These people belong here. They glide around effortlessly, as if they were born to be here, while I'm just trying to fake it well enough that no one notices I don't really have a clue.
Ready?
He offers me his arm and we walk back out into the carpeted hallway, and I totter a little in the 4-inch heels. Despite my new height, my escort is still a reassuring 3 or 4 inches taller than me, and I feel dainty and elegant walking next to him. But it also feels strange, stepping into this other life, slipping on designer shoes and borrowed confidence. At the end of the corridor, he opens the security door. The music and voices in the hospitality suite grow louder with each step we take. I only had a few gulps of champagne in the staff room, but I do feel a bit giddy. The U-turn my first evening's work has taken is out of sight. Walking in at 6 as a waitress to being escorted dressed in Ralph Lauren by 8, surreal is not the word.
I hope my manager doesn't see me, I mutter. She probably won't even recognize you. You're a different girl now.
I like the sound of that. A different girl. That's exactly who I need to be from now on. But if she does want to cause an issue, I'll handle it, okay? He winks at me, and I feel a rush of warmth when he slides a protective arm around my lower back. He ushers me into the function room again, this time as his companion for the evening. We've only walked a few steps inside when a glass is placed in my hand and we immediately become surrounded by guests eager for my escort's attention.
Hey man, great to see you.
Love the latest project.
So many people, all desperate for his recognition and approval. He hasn't told me exactly what it is he does, but everyone seems impressed.
Hi, Trent. We met last month at the...
This is Alicia.
Trent introduces me to every person he talks to. And just like that, I'm no longer invisible. Everyone is interested in me. Everyone wants to know who I am and what I do. I lock the Midlands girl in the homemade clothes away and drain my glass. Then I let the new me answer the barrage of questions that come my way. My glass is swiftly refilled and the server does a double take, looks over at someone across the room. She was one of the smirking colleagues when I first arrived and I give her a wry smile. I follow the server's stare and then I see her. Janice. Her expression is thunderous as she marches toward me, her heels striking the floor. My pulse rate jumps and I turn away pretending not to see her, but it's useless. A bony hand clamps onto my bare shoulder, her nails biting into my skin.
What didn't you understand about what I told you?
She hisses, loud enough to make nearby guests turn their heads.
You're fired. Get your things and...
She stops mid-sentence, her face draining of colour. Her grip slackens. I feel Trent's arm slide around my waist, his touch warm and reassuring. Alicia is now my guest for the evening, he says smoothly, his voice calm but edged with a quiet authority. Is there a problem? Janice swallows hard. The fire in her eyes flickers, struggling against the sudden shift in power.
No, I completely misunderstood the situation.
She glances at me, then back at Trent. I can still see the fight in her, see the way she wants to push back but knows she's already lost. Janice retreats stiffly, her back ramrod straight but eyes lowered, her defeat plain to see. I exhale, my mind racing. I turn to Trent, my voice unsure.
What exactly is it you do here?
He pauses, as if weighing up how best to say it. Then, with a slow smile, he delivers his thunderbolt.
I'm sorry. I should have told you sooner.
He tilts his head slightly, watching my reaction.
I'm Trent Connors. I own the orbit.
The hum of conversation around us zones out.
Trent Connors.
Thing is, I knew exactly who he was before I even walked in here. What I hadn't expected was for him to introduce himself so dramatically and, a big plus, at Janice's expense. I blink, tilting my head slightly, as if puzzled. Then I let a slow, surprised smile form.
You own the orbit,
I repeat, keeping my voice light and mildly curious. Let him think he still holds the upper hand.
Well, my company does. I'm just the idiot who signed off a cool 100,000 to get myself a, what was it? Vanilla members club interior.
He grins and holds up a hand.
No apologies. I don't get to hear much plain truth anymore. People tend to say what they think I want to hear.
He gives me a winning smile.
I find your honesty refreshing, Alicia. Now, it's time for me to say a few words to the guests, and then I'm all yours.
I literally could not have planned this any better. Chapter 4. The room quietens as Trent steps forward, effortlessly commanding attention. He doesn't need to raise his voice. Confidence, authority. It's all there in the way he stands and the easy way he regards the guests.
The orbit isn't just a building, he says, his tone measured, deliberate. It's a concept, a self-sustaining vertical city where exclusivity meets security, where people can live, work, and relax in a way the outside world can't offer.
A few guests exchange impressed looks. Others nod knowingly as if they already consider themselves part of that exclusive world.
Orbit London has proven our model works. A high-end ecosystem with layered security, every detail designed for discretion and efficiency. It's a sanctuary for those who demand more. More privacy, more control, more freedom from the chaos beyond these walls.
He pauses, scanning the room, letting the weight of his words settle before continuing.
But London is just the beginning. Orbit Manchester will take the vision for the future of urban living even further. A city within a city. A larger scale, a broader scope, and critically, a deeper integration. A space where innovation and influence can thrive. Where those of us who shape the world can do so without distraction.
A ripple of interest moves through the crowd. Investors just love phrases like the future of urban living. They hear opportunity and sense power. They smell money.
And now, here we stand at a turning point with two competing visions for the future,
Trent continues.
Next month,
Manchester City Council and the regulatory board will decide which project moves forward. Two very different ideas of what a modern city should look like. You guys already know my track record. You've seen what we've built here. He sweeps an arm around the room. I don't deal in promises. I deal in results. He studies the crowd, making eye contact, making it personal. So I'll ask you this. When the time comes, will I have your backing? Will I have your support in ensuring that Manchester chooses progress, security, and the kind of future that we believe in? Do you share the vision for Orbit 2?
I can feel the energy of the crowd shift. This is no longer just a presentation. It's a call to action. Trent Connors doesn't want their interest. He wants their allegiance. The tension builds until, with one final note, the room explodes and fills with rapturous applause. I can't deny it. He's good. Magnetic. Sharp. It's clear he believes in the orbit, and his belief and enthusiasm are infectious. I admire that about him. But I remind myself I'm not here to be dazzled by Trent Connor's charm or dashing good looks. My mind will stay where it needs to be, on the business at hand, on what I came here to do. I've been handed an amazing step up tonight. The pieces on the board are shifting, and I can't afford to lose focus now. Trent effortlessly works the room following his short presentation, keeping me with him the whole time. He involves me in his conversations, asks my opinion, making me feel like I belong in his world. No one seems to blink. I can't ignore the feeling we look great together. We speak to CEOs, television presenters, actors and agents. He thanks the event staff and makes comments on how smart the security team look. Never once does he change. I like that. The fact that Trent is the same person whoever he speaks to. Fancy a breath of fresh air? He says, indicating a discreet door at the end of the glass windows. We step outside onto a wraparound balcony, the hum of conversation and clinking glasses muffled as the door swings shut behind us. The air is crisp this high up, carrying the faint scent of rain. Below us, London stretches endlessly, a sea of glowing streets and glass towers, cars snaking through the dark like electric veins. Behind us, the party continues, laughter, music, and the constant thrum of networking. Trent leans casually on the secure glass railing, unfazed by the dizzying drop. You'll meet a lot of people tonight. He glances at me with a knowing smile. Some of them are folks I do business with, and I'm curious to hear what you make of them. What exactly do you do? In a nutshell, I build things, bring people together. Orbit London is the jewel in my crown, though, so I've made it my base. I'm hoping to replicate what we've done here in other places. Sounds intriguing, I murmur. We go back in and approach a big guy with a shiny, bald head, wearing a smart navy suit. I served him champagne earlier. Alicia, meet one of my associates, Paul Clifford. He looks harmless, but don't be fooled. He's an animal in the boardroom. Trent squeezes the man's shoulder and grins.
Very pleased to meet you, Alicia.
Clifford bows his head, obviously not recognizing me as one of the waiting staff.
Trent, you're punching well above your weight, you know that, right?
A charmer. I smile and shake his hand. The two men joke around, their banter easy and familiar. Clearly, they're comfortable in each other's company. Loud and brash, Clifford launches into an animated story about his time working with the famous UK business tycoon, someone everyone knows from a popular TV show.
So there I am, he says, grinning, sitting across from the man himself, and he just looks at me, dead serious, and says, Cliff, I don't pay you to think.
He throws up his hands.
I mean, what do you even say to that?
The group laughs, and Clifford basks in it, clearly enjoying the attention. He leans in conspiratorially.
Of course, I did think, and you know what?
I saved him a hell of a lot of money.
He winks.
Not that he ever admitted it.
I glance around. People are drawn to him, his energy, his confidence. He's a people magnet, effortlessly holding court as the crowd around us grows. When we move on, Trent slides his hand into his pocket, glancing back toward the group.
He enjoys the spotlight, doesn't he?
I let out a small laugh. Just a bit. You'd think he was the one with the TV show. Trent smirks.
He probably thinks he should be.
He takes a sip of his drink, then tilts his head toward me.
You ever met anyone like him before?
I consider it. Not exactly.
He's a lot. That's one way to put it.
Trent looks amused. After a beat, his voice lowers slightly.
What did you think of him?
I take a sip of my champagne, considering. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's certainly that.
Trent hesitates.
But if you were me, would you trust him?
I swirl the champagne in my glass, thinking. I don't know him, so I couldn't say for sure. But I found that people who rely on humour the way he does, big, brash, always looking for the laugh, they're usually hiding something. Trent looks intrigued.
Hiding what?
I press my lips together. Could be anything. Insecurity, past failures, the need to prove something. Laughter is a great distraction, isn't it? If people are entertained, they don't look too closely at what's underneath. He watches me, thoughtful.
And you think that applies to Paul?
I let a small smile play on my lips. Like I said, I don't know him. But if I had to guess, that confidence of his, it's not just for show. It's for protection. Trent considers this, then gives a slow nod, a glint of admiration in his eyes.
That's an interesting take.
His mouth curves into a small smile.
Remind me never to underestimate you.
I hide my smile behind my champagne glass. Little does he know, he already has. But then, that's what makes this so interesting. We refresh our drinks and saunter around the enormous space that's packed with people. Trent moves beside me, tall and assured. He has the kind of presence that commands everyone's attention without trying. I feel the other guests stare wherever we go. Little ripples of curiosity and envy, their whispers following us like an invisible tide. I glance up at him, letting a small smile curve my lips, knowing it's being watched and noted. Trent leans down, murmuring in my ear.
When can we escape this hellhole?
A hellhole at 58 floors up, a private joke meant to make me laugh, and I do. The sound drawing even more attention. My dress gleams under the lights, and I can feel the weight of speculation with every step we take. Who is she? Are they a couple? I hold my head high, a picture of composure and manners, but inside, I'm buzzing. Charged by the energy of the room and the commanding presence of the man beside me.
And here's the man himself,
Trent's voice booms out, shaking me out of my reverie.
The legendary Dan McGraw.
Trent, how are you, mate?
Good, good, meet Alicia.
The tall, suave Scotsman with swept back red hair looks at me, smiling.
Nice to meet you, sweetheart.
I say hi, sip my drink and avert my eyes, appearing to let their conversation wash over me. It's the usual pleasantries at first, mutual acquaintances, a passing remark about the champagne, but then the tone shifts. The man lowers his voice slightly.
So, we're still on for Tuesday.
Trent gives a small, unreadable smile.
Of course, usual place, usual time.
My ears prick up.
Good. We'll have a lot to discuss about the Manchester bed.
The man claps Trent on the shoulder, his grip lingering just a second too long.
Might have some useful information for you by then.
Then, with a nod in my direction, he slips away into the crowd. I glance at Trent.
Friend of yours?
He exhales, finishing the last of his drink.
Something like that. Don't know what's wrong with Dan tonight. He's usually the life and soul of the party,
Trent says.
He's asked me to come in on a big joint investment with him next year. Great guy.
Really?
I wiggle my glass and watch as the bubbles in my drink dance and pop.
Trent grins and stops walking to snatch a canapé from a waiter's tray.
Indulge me, he smiles. It amuses me to hear your thoughts.
Should I tell him the truth?
The night's nearly at an end anyway. However disastrous it would be if I never see Trent Connors again, at least he'll remember me every time he bumps into the guy. And this is a great chance to try to impress him. I swallow a gulp of champagne before looking Trent in the eye.
Sorry, but in my opinion, he's a bit of a snake. Not to be trusted.
Trent's expression sharpens, but I press on. I saw you two deep in conversation earlier. And when you got called away, he went and stood near the windows to make a call. I only caught a few words, something about pushing the deal through before anyone catches on. Sounded shady to me.
Trent frowns, about to speak, but I shake my head. That's not the only reason I don't trust him. I've seen him before, at another event a few weeks back, a charity gala. He was all smiles in the room, shaking hands, making promises. I lower my voice. But later, I caught him in the hallway, tearing into someone who works for him, properly humiliating the guy, all because he hesitated on a deal. The moment someone with power walked by, though, he switched right back to charm mode.
Trent exhales slowly, his gaze unreadable. And you saw all this while handing out drinks.
I give him a wry smile. People don't pay much attention to servers. You'd be amazed what you can pick up when no one thinks you're listening.
Very interesting. But you see, that attitude you saw, however heinous, is useful to me. McGraw is ruthless, and he's on my side against another even bigger snake who's running the rival project for Manchester. You should meet that guy. Makes Dan McGraw look like a pussycat.
I shiver. Suddenly the room seems too loud, too many people pressing close.
Nothing for you to worry about, Trent smiles. Your powers of observation fascinate me.
Let's just say I learned how to keep my eyes and ears open at a young age, I say softly. It pays to watch for signs.
Yeah? What sort of signs?
I don't know, I say, thinking about Dad's hands and the shapes they made just before he got angry. Depends on what it is I'm looking for. Later, when most people have left the event, Trent and I sit at the mirrored bar where I first spotted him. This time, it's just the two of us having a quiet drink. He says,
So, Alicia, have you enjoyed tonight?
I feel a jolt at his sudden air of formality. He's letting me down gently. Maybe I'm not his type after all. And just when I thought I'd snared him, I should have known it was all happening too soon, too fast. But I need him to want more. I think about the missed calls on my phone, about having to admit my plan has been a failure. I think of little Brody, of what they said they would do to him. No, I can't let the best chance I'll have slip away. I force a slow, easy smile, letting amusement flicker in my eyes as if I'm the one calling time on the evening. Well, I say, lifting my foot to show off my heels. It's been great, and it's been a real pleasure to torture my feet in these beauties all evening. Then I let my gaze linger on his body, just for a beat, before meeting his eyes again. Though, I have to say, I expected a little more appreciation for the effort. I keep my voice light, teasing, like this is all just a game, a challenge.
Because if I know one thing about men like Trent Connors, it's that they never like to feel they're the ones being left behind. I wait, watching for the telltale shift, the hesitation, the flicker of second thoughts. If I've played this right, he'll be the one reaching out for me, if it's not too late. Trent's gaze flicks down to my feet, then back to my face, a slow smirk tugging at the corner of his mouth.
I did warn you, beauty comes at a price.
Oh yes, I am well aware of that. I tip my head, playful, distant. Well, I suppose I should leave you to it. Wouldn't want to outstay my welcome.
You leaving so soon?
He murmurs. Would be a shame. Fancy coming back to mine for a nightcap? I have to go back downstairs. My handbag and clothes are still in the function suite.
No need. I'll have those brought to you, he says quickly.
Okay, scrap that. Maybe it's not too late after all. A frisson of electricity buzzes down my arms, but it's not attraction. It's opportunity. The voice in my head says, do I really want to go back to his place? And the answer is most definitely yes. Yes, that is exactly what I need to do. Chapter 5. Do you live far? I say innocently as we head toward the lift.
Not that far, he grins. You might be surprised.
We step inside the lift and he waves a key card in front of a sensor. We start to move smoothly up a few levels. Oh, I thought we'd be going down to the lobby for your car. I frown to suggest mild surprise at going up. At least that's what he needs to think. I glance at Trent, feigning curiosity, but he offers nothing. No explanation, no change in expression. Just the quiet confidence of a man who knows exactly where we're going. Of course, so do I. But he doesn't know that. And for now, that's exactly how I need to keep it. This is us, Trent says as the lift stops and the doors open. We step out into a spacious round landing with floor-to-ceiling windows that face out over the London skyline. We must be very close to the very top of the orbit now. I slip off my heels and my bare feet sink into a plush, soft pile cream carpet. It's so quiet and peaceful up here. Another world entirely. Trent heads for two polished mahogany doors while I'm still taking in the tasteful furnishings, particularly two mirrored console tables that bear oversized vases filled with fresh white lilies. An electronic beep sounds as Trent dramatically pushes both doors open together.
After you.
I'm knocked out at the sheer size of the living space we walk into. I follow Trent around the enormous semicircle of luxury living on a scale I didn't even know existed. The now familiar floor-to-ceiling windows are accompanied, this time, by polished wooden floors and cream wool rugs. Oversized chunky sofas in a soft cream boucle face the city view, while outside, a generous wraparound terrace dotted with illuminated glass lanterns runs along the entire circumference of the room. From here, I can see the London Eye glowing softly against the dark. We walk past an open-plan, stainless steel kitchen without a single item out of place. There's a reading nook filled with scatter cushions and a squashy chair, a stylish cloakroom. Trent leads me up a glass spiral staircase at the far end, and we're in a spectacular master bedroom with a circular bed and mirrored walls. There are two guest bedrooms further along. This place is insane, I gasp. This is your home. All mine, he says, giving me a devilish grin.
I chose the furnishings and everything. Well, with the help of my useless interior designer, that is.
I return the grin, but I don't bite this time. We walk past the master bedroom again and I almost hesitate, thinking this must be the reason he's brought me up here. But Trent doesn't break his stride. And I follow him back downstairs.
I'm unsure whether I feel relieved he's not trying it on or concerned. If he was making a move, it would mean I had him exactly where I needed him. But his restraint, that could suggest he's still holding something back. And if I haven't hooked him enough yet, then that could be a problem. Back downstairs in the lounge, I linger by the windows and marvel at the cityscape stretching out beneath us. London looks like an open jewelry box, her best gems lit and spilling out. Behind me, Trent puts on some Café Del Mar, and I hear the faintest clink of crystal before he joins me at the window, handing me a fresh flute.
London. She's something, isn't she?
He gestures toward the view. His smile is as cool as ever, but I can feel the heat of his gaze just behind it. You're a lucky guy, I say, watching him from the corner of my eye. You get to enjoy this view all the time.
I know, but you kind of get used to it.
He shrugs, sipping his drink.
A terrible admission, isn't it? That we can become quickly accustomed to the most beautiful things in life, to the extent we stop seeing them.
I wouldn't know, I say lightly.
Well, I admit it. There are days I forget to look. So,
he raises his glass.
Thank you for reminding me. And here's to all the beautiful things right in front of us.
Lifting my glass toward the sparkling view that feels like a rare gift, I think I'll probably never stand here again. So best to enjoy it while it lasts.
So, what are Alicia's hopes and dreams?
He says.
Somehow, I don't think you're the kind of girl who'll be happy serving drinks all their life.
I feel slightly awkward opening up like this. I don't want to trip up. At the same time, it's good to show him my vulnerable side. I mean, I suppose I'd like to be financially comfortable. Build a good life for myself. I'd like to put my waitressing experience to good use and run my own events company one day. Work toward a better future for my son.
You have a son?
I nod. He's two. Brody. His dad's not on the scene, so my sister looks after him for me, back in Nottingham. He nods.
And then? When you've made your events company a huge success?
I shrug. Settle down to a good life, eventually. A simple life.
And what would that life look like?
I exhale, letting my gaze drift for a moment. I don't know. Settle down somewhere quiet. No looking over my shoulder, no second guessing every move, just peace with my son. A place that feels like mine. The words come out softer than I intend. The vision is so fragile. When I glance back at Trent, he's watching me. Really watching. Not just hearing the words, but understanding what they mean to me. There's no teasing remark, no easy deflection. Just quiet attention. The kind that makes my pulse stutter. It feels like, for once, someone actually gets it. He holds my gaze and murmurs.
Not just a place, then. More a feeling.
It's so close to what I meant, what I want one day for myself, Jen and Brody, that it steals my breath for a second. That's exactly it. A feeling. I swallow, pushing Brody's image firmly aside and focusing on the person Trent wants me to be. Someone footloose and fancy free who looks good on his arm, I'm guessing. I can do that. To get to where I need to be. Trent looks like he's forgotten the skyline altogether. A raft of heat begins to slow creep up my neck. What's wrong?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
He leans in a little closer.
I'm just thinking how beautiful you are, Alicia.
He says, his voice low. His fingers find mine across the space between us. It's such a simple phrase, a cliche, even. But it sends a thrill down my spine, nevertheless. I hold his gaze,
letting the warmth of his words sink in.
Do you fancy doing something different?
A hint of mischief twinkles in his eyes.
Something a little daring.
My pulse quickens. What have you got in mind?
Come with me and I'll show you.
He stands up.
We'll take our drinks up with us.
Where are we going?
He laughs and takes my hand. You'll see.
I reach for my shoes and he shakes his head.
You won't need those.
I follow him, the champagne softening my doubts. We return to the private lift in the hallway. We step inside and the lift doors slide shut with a quiet thud. Trent presses the button for the 68th floor and I'm suddenly aware how close we're standing together. His broad frame fills all the space between us. My face so close to the warmth of his neck, I can smell his subtle aftershave. The lift hums, rushing upward, whisking us away from Trent's stunning home to something else intriguing that no longer feels like the end of our evening. When the doors open, I can't help the gasp that escapes my lips. The warm, glowing room we step into looks like something out of a dream. A long, turquoise pool stretches before us. The sleek, still water reflecting a galaxy ceiling that twinkles with hundreds of tiny lights, as if the Milky Way itself has been harnessed inside. Around us, the glass walls reveal London from a new height, a dizzying array of glitter below that frames the city like a map laid out just for us to enjoy.
Trent, this is incredible,
I whisper, trying to take it all in. A flash of paintbox red armbands and Brody splashing happily at the local community swimming pool plays before my eyes. Turtle Tots swimming group. Every Tuesday morning we used to go there. I blink the memory away and wait for the ache to subside.
Special here, isn't it?
Trent's voice sounds even deeper in the hushed surroundings. I stay quiet, allowing myself to soak in the moment. Just the two of us in here, looking down on a toy town London. All those people, the problems of the past, none of it exists in this moment. Briefly, I close my eyes, wishing I could stay up here forever. Trent slides a finger under my chin and pushes gently so I look into his eyes.
So, are you feeling daring enough to test the water?
I grin. It looks nice and warm, so yes, I'm up for a midnight swim. I look around at the padded loungers and the thick white towels folded there. Are there swimsuits? Trent laughs, a deep, rich sound as thick as treacle that vibrates through my body. Without another word, he slips off his jacket, letting it fall.